Welcome to Cardboard Conjecture. We're a podcast about board games where we have opinions and conclusions formed on the basis of incomplete information. This episode of Cardboard Conjecture is brought to you by these great Saskatoon businesses: Amazing Stories Comics on 8th Street, Dragon's Den Games on 8th Street, and Breakout Escape Rooms on Faithful Avenue.
Well, hello there. How's it going, eh? This is What You've Been Playing Wednesday, and this is a special weekly episode that's a compilation of all the board games that we've been playing recently. And on this episode are Mr. Board Games, definitely a board game podcast, The Meeple Dungeon, Dice and Dragons, and Cardboard Conjecture. And as always, please remember to check out the show notes for the links to all the content creators that are part of the What You've Been Playing Wednesday cast. And now sit back and enjoy.
Hey everybody, it's Em.
What's going on, folks? It's R.
And together we are Mr. Board Games.
Then today is What You've Been Playing Wednesday.
And this week we've been playing a few games with friends.
Well, I know we have friends. It's surprising. It's our table isn't as lonely when we have friends.
Exactly. We had a couple friends from work, one from my work, one from
my work.
Yeah. And we played three games.
We did. We played three games, and it probably was fantastic because we haven't really had a chance to have people over in some time. So that was great to get that option too. So what was the first game we played that night?
We played Betrayal because it's our go-to for newbies, and we had a newbie at the table who, besides playing like Risk and Monopoly in the Game of Life, has never, you know, diverged into the games. So we played Betrayal at House on the Hill, and I want to say it was a hit.
Yeah, it is. So in case you don't know what Betrayal is, can you tell us a little bit about what Betrayal is?
Betrayal is a tile building, tile laying adventure game where you are explorers in a house and you go around flipping tiles and exploring the house until you trigger an event. And then from that point on, there is a traitor and a team of heroes. The heroes work together to try and thwart the traitor's plan, and the traitor tries to complete their plan before the heroes get a chance to oust him from the house.
Yeah, it is a semi-cooperative game. And you said it was a hit.
Yeah, so I think that, well, I mean, when we had your coworker over initially, we played it with him. Mm-hmm. And we've played it pretty much every time he's come over since. And then with my coworker, it's just so simple to teach and to play. Like, it's not overly complicated at all. Like, it's a very much you can explain as you play kind of game. And it's just very basic, and it's just a nice warm-up game. Mm-hmm. And it's super fun.
And she seemed to be into it.
Yeah,
she seemed to
super
be into it. Versus the rest of the games. Because in the next game we kind of touched on was, it's not in chronological order here. The next one we touched on was Takanoko. Takanoko is also kind of a tile laying game. Wow, there's a lot of tile laying games. It's a tile laying game where you are growing bamboo and you must eat the bamboo with a panda because it's always the fun part of it all. And she seemed angry, I would say, in that when she bent my cards. I was really sad about that.
I think more less focus. This is what happens when you play a game with somebody who has ADHD.
Yeah.
And if you can't keep them really focused on the game, then their mind starts to wander and they don't seem completely into it. She's also a fidgeter. So I think kind of like the holding of the cards and kind of that like bent shape they get when you hold them too tight is just result of that, but yeah it kind of hurts a little when
Takanoko is one of our cuter games, I'd say. A cuter game there.
Little panda.
We didn't play with the expansion. We threw that in there. There is an expansion available to it, but we didn't really include that. We just went straight forward.
I think when you're trying to teach somebody how to play board games or about board games or about different board games, throwing in too many expansions makes it hella confusing.
But again, it's a fun game that we enjoy playing. Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty easy to get into.
And then we did Disney Munchkin.
Disney Munchkin, yeah.
Which just the Disney version of classic Steve Jackson's Munchkin plays very much the same. You kick down a door, you loot the room, you fight monsters, you level up, and you put on armor. And I think she was more into that. A, because it's Disney. How could you not?
She was mean, okay? You all ganged up on me that day. Every single one of you, all three of you were like, nah, let's go take R down. He's a loser.
He's not a loser.
I had, you got to remember who I had. I had Betamax. I was just having a good time.
It's Baymax.
Okay, fine. Baymax. Sorry. Jeez, you were correct.
Get it right.
Get it right. I had Baymax and I was trying to be satisfied with my care, but you all just ganged up on me and said, nah, take him down. Bunch of.
Yeah, and I just had all the allies, so.
It wasn't even villainous. Like, we weren't playing with villains. We were all good people.
That's true.
Oh, you're all just so mean.
A little bit, but in Munchkin, you kind of have to be a little mean. Otherwise, you know, a certain somebody might win, and we don't want that to happen.
Yeah, we don't want M to win. exactly. And that is what we've been playing this week. That's three games. That's Betrayal at House on the Hill, plus Widow's Walk came with it. We threw that in there. Disney Munchkin and Takanako, which we had a little debate who would say that one.
Because I kept screwing it up. Yep.
So those are it's been a while since we had them, and we had that opportunity. It was real fun and real good. And
now that it's winter, we're playing more games. So
that's true. That's true.
So until next time, you can check us out on YouTube and Twitter and Instagram at Mr. _lonely table, and just make sure you keep it on the rails
and the dice on the table, and we'll see you all next week. Thanks.
Hello, I am Aaron Milich.
And I'm Royce Calverley.
And we are definitely a board game podcast. A podcast definitely about board games, except when they're not. And we're back. We
definitely are.
We definitely are. And we're definitely back on What You've Been Playing Wednesday.
Here. Definitely back too, yeah.
What You've Been Playing Wednesday, Roy? Stop interrupting me.
What did we say we was playing? Oh, I know what I was playing. I was playing a wee little micro game.
Yes.
Or maybe a macro game. Or both. Yeah, I was playing Micro Macro Crime City. I finally got a copy. The first time it came to Canada, it blew out of the store so fast I didn't even have a chance. And then it won the Spiel des Jahres, and you know, everybody wanted it, and I figured I would have a copy, but it was too late. So I finally got a copy. I have in the past perhaps been a little bit vocal on this does not look like a game. It just looks like a puzzle.
You have.
Yeah, yeah. And it is. Okay, let's get that out of the way. There's no real game here.
Oh.
Right? There's no competition. It's just a puzzle to solve. And everything is there in front of you. You're not putting pieces together. You're just looking at the map and trying to figure out what to do. So for anyone who doesn't know what this game is, you've got a big map. It's almost like 4 feet by 3 feet type size, covered in itty bitty teeny weeny tiny little drawings of people and buildings and houses and cars and everything else. And you're trying to figure out what happened in various cases. And what makes this game, activity, puzzle, whatever you want to call it, really cool, let's get that out of the way, it's neat, is it's not just a static picture. It's not like one of those, find the clue in the picture, right? It's not. Because the picture isn't static. And what I mean by that is if you're following one little guy, say the guy with this, with a deerstalker hat, you'll see him appear again on another street over and another street over from that. Or maybe he goes into a car and you can follow the car along, because the entire map is like a living moment in time where it covers a story. And you can follow people through their day. You can see where they stopped, where they went shopping, which car they got into, where they put their car, if they got into a car accident, where they went after that. Like, you can follow them along on this map. So you've got these interconnected stories all over the place and in tiny, tiny, tiny little detail, which is really my only issue because it's so small. I've got my nose like pumped up to the map and I'm leaning over the table. My back is starting to hurt because I'm old, but you know, it's just such a neat activity. I get why it won the Spiel. It's something that you could really do maybe with one other person, really enjoy it working together. More than that, I don't know if that would be plausible. We found even with just two, we're sometimes getting in the way of each other, trying to look at the map because, you know, we got our nose up against the map and we're blocking half of it. And it's just, yeah, it's a really neat experience. It's cheap. It's well worth picking up just to try. And then when you're done, you just pass it off to somebody else because there's no destruction of components. You're not writing on the board or anything like that. You're just going through the cases. We're about halfway through. We've spent many hours playing it. It's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it.
I just have one question.
Okay.
Did you find Waldo?
I found people that look like Waldo.
Yeah.
But they're not Waldo because Waldo is trademarked.
Oh, okay.
But yes, they actually did include a Waldo type looking guy in there as a joke. Yeah.
So Micro Macro Crime City, Johannes Sitsch and Pegasus Spiel 2020. My game, you're going to have to look up while I'm talking about it, who made it. It's Tiny Epic.
Way to do your prep work, man. Way to do your prep work.
Well, you didn't mention yours, so you can do mine.
Yeah, I provided it.
That's true. Tiny Epic Dinosaurs is the one I want to talk about. This is a game that I've played once before with the wife, and she didn't like it. And then this weekend we brought it out with a group of four of us, and not only did my wife not like it, she also won. This is a game...
But she didn't like it?
She still doesn't like it, no, but she's still one. I don't know. She's complicated. This game is a worker placement game. It's very much like Jurassic Park. You're basically trying to raise dinosaurs, feed dinosaurs, ranch dinosaurs, and then fulfill contracts in selling dinosaurs. And you play over six rounds. The trick of the game is to always have enough food. Otherwise, your dinosaurs are going to escape. You're always going to make sure you have the right barriers. Otherwise, your dinosaurs are going to escape. And you want to make sure you don't put carnivores with herbivores. Otherwise, guess what?
Yum, yum, yum,
yum. You got it. There's these fancy purple dinosaurs that have all kinds of special powers and things. And there's research cards and all kinds of stuff happening. It's a tiny little game with little tiny dinosaur meeples and small cards, and it comes in a small box, but man, big game. They recommend 60 minutes. I think we actually went to 2 hours in this one. We went way over playing it,
Wow. Making
decisions, trying to come up with the right thing. It was a close game, but as I said, my wife took it away, and then she's like, yeah, still don't like it. So that was even extra, insult to injury for the rest of us. But I do recommend this one. It gets good marks across the board. There's a whole series of these tiny games. I know the tiny.
Yeah, that's when you said who did it, I knew it was Scott Alms and Gamelin Games because of the whole series.
Yeah. And there's like the Tiny Epic Galaxies, which I think also score well, but there's some that didn't score as well. So you may want to do your research before checking out other ones, but I do recommend Tiny Epic Dinosaurs. It's cute, it's fun, but it's not small. It's very rich, very deep. Prepare to spend some time on it. Otherwise, you'll be disappointed.
Ah, but the important question.
Yes.
Is it micro?
It's pretty micro.
Or macro?
I'm going to stop you there. I don't know how to deal with you like this, Royce.
Way you usually do. You just mute my mic and move on.
Am I allowed to do that?
Like you have ever asked before.
I could just mute you, couldn't I? I am doing the thing over here. Anyway, enough about that. If you want to hear more craziness from us, come over to Definitely a Board Game Podcast. That's our main podcast. We have 44 episodes on. It's like, it's insane. We've been doing this forever. Check us out there. And if you want to leave us, drop us a line, definitelyboard@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter @BoardDefinitely, Facebook @DefinitelyBoard, and there's a guild on Board Game Geek called Definitely a Board Game Podcast. You can find us there. But the best thing to do is just find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We have our own website. Or you can just look and find us wherever you're hearing this podcast, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure it's there.
Yeah. Anything else, Royce?
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
Say goodbye, Royce.
Goodbye, Royce.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, folks. It's Ryan here from Bridge City Board Gamers, and I'm one half of the weekly podcast Cardboard Conjecture, where we offer our opinions and conclusions formed on the basis of incomplete information. Check us out on our social media, Twitter, Instagram, at BC Board Gamers. And we're also on YouTube. Search up Bridge City Board Gamers, where we are live streaming our recordings for Cardboard Conjecture every Monday night. And then also every Wednesday, including tonight, you can check me out playing all sorts of different games. And tonight, you can check me with Riley Stock from the Board Game Community Show as we continue our adventures in Arkham Horror, the Living Card Game. Now, what have I been playing lately? Well, I've been playing train games, but, you know, not the 18XX really, really heavy train games, but something more, a little bit accessible. Now, back on episode 107, where we had Chad from Of Dice and Men on the hype train, I mentioned in our banter that I've been playing Imperial Steam, published by Capstone Games and designed by Alexander Humer. Now, we have not stopped playing Imperial Steam because, man, it is a really, really good economic Euro, quote-unquote, train-type game where you're, you know, collecting goods and laying down track, using your workers, sending those workers off to work in factories to hopefully produce goods and ship goods for you in the hopes of, you know, trying to raise the most money over the course of 8 rounds or until a certain player reaches a certain spot on the map. Now, we've only, at the time of the recording of episode 107, we had only just played the what they refer to as the normal setup, which is it's the same setup every single game. The same cities are in the same, the same tiles are in the same cities all the time. And the goods track is always the same and everything's always fixed. And we wanted to play that a few times just to get a good feel for what you're actually supposed to be doing during this game. Now we have shifted our focus, so now that we are trying out the variable setups where we're now shuffling the tiles that go onto the cities and randomly placing them out and also randomly generating where the state railroads are going to be and how many goods you can purchase in a particular round are. And man, I don't think we will ever play without the variable setup from here on forward because it really changes the strategy of the game because now you're not, you can get in that static setup, you can always kind of get stuck doing the same thing. It was kind of just a tutorial without being a tutorial is essentially what it is. And you would get stuck in kind of a routine knowing that, okay, doing this, building a factory, connecting here to get some money, it would be always the same every single game. Where now the variable setup, this is really quite cool. You have to kind of spend the very first, you know, little bit of the very beginning of the game to really analyze the board and try to figure out where the strong parts of the map are going to be. Are there, where's the most efficient routes to go down and building your track? Where are the good bonuses? Where are the factory spots? A lot of different things that you have to pay attention to in that variable setup. That, you know, gets quite static in that normal setup. So the variable setup really brings this game really to life. It just makes it more wide open. Now, I have also tried out with this variable strategy, the variable setup. I tried out the new strategy with the going heavy on the contracts and the investors, which is really, really a neat part of this game because in other train games, there's like, you know, stocks involved and everything. You have to take like, you know, you have to use spreadsheets and stuff like that to keep track of what. In this one, you can sell shares of your company to investors, which will give you a influx in cash right off the bat for the return of that at the end of the game. They will each claim 10% of your final funds. So if you, you know, use 10 investors over the game, you're actually going to end up with $0 because it'll just, you know, snowball after that. So I tried it out and almost came out. I ended up using 4 investors, which means I ended up losing 40% of my endgame cash. But that also meant that I was completing lots of contracts. I got a lot of factories out onto the board. And I ended up losing by about $50. Like, I think our final scores were something along the lines of like 750 to 700. It was something like that. So there is something to be said about the investor strategy. And it was really, really quite cool to see that pay off, because I did have a big chunk of cash at the very end of the game, but I ended up losing almost half of it. Really interesting mechanic to that game. So Imperial Steam by Alexander Humer. I think I might have to go out on the whim here. We're at the end of November, beginning of December here. This just may be my game of the year. It is very, very good. And I can't wait just to keep exploring those variable setups. I'm still yet to play it with more than 2 players. But on that note, this is an excellent 2-player economic train type game. Highly recommend that if you have a chance to check out this copy or end up picking yourself up a copy if you think you're going to be enjoying this type of game. Bear with me though, it is a table hog. It does take quite a bit of time to set up. But once you get past all that, oh my goodness, you will not be disappointed. Also, coming up this Saturday, you're going to hear my thoughts on another train game. I've been playing Railroad Revolution, published by What's Your Game. Much different type of style of train game than Imperial Steam, just because I'm in this kind of like pseudo train game fix right now. So yeah, coming up this Saturday, you can hear my thoughts on what Railroad Revolution has to offer and how it kind of compares to something like Imperial Steam. And that's what I've been playing lately. I've been Ryan of the Cardboard Conjecture Podcast and Bridge City Board Gamers here in Saskatoon. Make sure you check us out on our social media, Twitter and Instagram at BC Board Gamers. We also have our Facebook community group that is very active every now and then. And then also our YouTube channel. Check Riley and I out tonight, where we're playing Arkham Horror, the living card game. Okay, folks, I'll see you next week.
Hello everybody, it's Rob and Anna Marie from the Meeple Dungeon.
Hello!
And we're back again recording for the Whatcha Been Playing Wednesdays podcast, and this week we have one game to talk about. What game is that, Anna Marie?
That game is Telstone's King's Gambit, designed by Chris Cantrell and published by Riot Games.
Yeah, King's Gambit, it's called Telstones.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is from that
League of Legends.
League of Legends video game, and I guess in the game they play this game.
Yeah. I haven't played that game or seen you play that one, but
no, it's not one I've played.
But I thought this was such a neat idea, because there are other games that you've played where you can see them, and we've actually commented on it, and be like, "Oh, I wonder what game they're playing in like yeah. a tavern." It's like they should make those.
Yeah.
And they've done
that in several games, yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool to see this. But this is one I did not know about.
No.
And we just picked this game up at the local game shop's Black Friday deal, where it was like
$20.
Yeah, but I think it was like $30 off or something.
Yeah, it was big
pretty
discount.
Crazy
so.
Deal. So we picked it up and we've played it a few times, and yeah, let's chat about it. So this one is a neat one. This one is it says either 2-player or 4-player, but this is a 2-player.
I would say 2-player. I think 4-player would be, I mean, granted we haven't played it at 4-player, but that would get real confusing.
Yeah, I think
this is a legit
chess match. Where, so to set this game up, you've got a little rollout mat, which is nice. It just kind of rolls out there
nice
on the table.
Nice little blue mat.
Long rectangular mat.
Kind of looks like KeyForge, where you have like the three, not spots for the keys, but three spots for your points at the bottom. It doesn't look like KeyForge at all, but it's just it's just got like three little three little spots. Well, not really. Three keys.
Yeah, I
suppose. Three points to win. It's not that far of a stretch.
But it's on this mat. So the whole way this game works is there's how many different tiles? There's seven tiles.
Yeah.
And they each have a different logo on them. And there's one with a sword, a shield, a crown,
hammer, scales, a knight, and a flag.
Yeah, and so you're going to start with one in the middle, and generally they say to start with
the scales. They say in the middle. You just, you know, it's a balance,
yeah,
but you don't have to.
Let's say I'm going first. The way it works for me is I point at one of the tiles that's not on the board yet, and I say, Anna Marie, you need to place this tile to the right of the whatever is on the...
Yeah, so place the knight to the right of the scales.
Yeah, so you'd have to take it and put it to the right.
We and scrapped then, right and left real fast.
And just you're, said, put it here.
Because you're sitting on opposite sides of the table, and that's another layer of confusion. Maybe when we're masters at the game, but...
Yeah, and then you on your turn would have the same option. You could tell me to place a tile on the table.
And so I could say, you know, Rob, place the hammer beside... on the other side of the scales. And I would just point. You point kind of where you want it to go.
So now we would have three of these tiles sitting face up on the board. And then on my turn, one of the other options you can do instead of telling you to place one would be to hide one.
Yes.
So I'd say hide the knight.
And you're always pointing to where you want what you want to hide at. Because as you get more tiles out, you don't have to say the actual name of it. Like you could,
because you're gonna try and trick each other.
Yeah. So when you hide it, I hid that one. I flipped it over. So the next turn, I don't even remember which one you said to hide.
No, it doesn't matter. So, but what we're getting at here is that the three different options are to tell your opponent to place a tile on the board.
Yep.
Tell your opponent to hide. Flip face down.
Or another one is you can tell your opponent to swap two tiles.
Right.
So any you're pointing at the two tiles, but you can name them whatever you want. So you could say, Rob, swap the shield and the sword as you point at them, but the shield is flipped down. Knowing full well
that they're not those, yes.
Like, the shield is flipped down, but it's not actually the shield. It's, it might be the crown underneath there.
Yeah. You're trying to
mess
to
with
trip
them.
Up your opponent into
but in doing
forgetting
so,
what's what.
You're messing up yourself too.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Which we found out. So yeah, you're gonna get all these tiles onto the board generally. You're gonna have all seven of them out there, and some are gonna be face up, some are gonna be face down. You're gonna start swapping them around. And you're gonna start calling them random things. So there's a couple face down. I'll say swap the hammer with the sword, full well me knowing that the sword is actually the shield and the hammer might be something else. And we're flipping them or swapping them into different spots and different locations.
And once you've done that, some other options come into play. You can, on your turn, choose to peek at a stone.
Yep.
So you can choose to peek at one. Now, we'll get into how you get points in a second, but if your opponent has just received a point, whether it's on their turn or because of something on your turn, but they got a point, and you choose the peek action immediately after they've received a point, you get to peek at three tiles instead of one. Which is huge. It still didn't help me.
No, because you haven't won yet.
No, I haven't.
But in order to get points in this game, you have a few different options. You're going to boast to get points.
You can boast to win.
Yes, but so if you say you're going to boast, you're going to say, I know what everything is on the board.
Yep, period. I know all
whether
the hidden
symbols. Face up, face down, if there's only two on the board, seven on the board. As long as I say I boast, I'm predicting that I know everything and what they are and where they are.
And that's his turn. He just
then,
says he boasts. Then
yeah,
it's
then
in
it's
my,
up to
car,
you
my court.
To challenge me on that.
So I can say, I have three options. I can say, one, I believe you. Have a point. So you know what? I think he knows what they all are. So I'm not going to challenge you on it. You just take the point.
You would simply just give me a point. And this is a best of three. First to 3 points wins.
First to 3 points wins. Yeah.
So getting a point is a big deal.
However, when you boast, so then I could also say, I don't believe you. Prove it.
Right. And then the ball's back to my court.
Yeah.
And I have to go through them, flipping them up, starting from wherever, saying, okay, this one here, this is the sword. I'd flip it up, and if it's the sword, great.
And you
then
keep
I'd
going.
Move on to the next one, say, this one is the crown. And I flip it up, and it's wrong.
Then you lose automatically, and I win the game.
Yes.
Because that, when you boast, if you... if they challenge you on a boast and you get anything wrong, automatic loss.
Yeah.
The third option on the boast is I could say, you say, like, because you've said, I know all the hidden symbols. I could say, I don't care. I know them too.
Yep.
And on that,
when it passes the ball back to my court again.
And then what he would say, then he would have to say, oh, I believe you have a point. So I could get a point off of his boast.
Yep.
So or, that's why you wouldn't want to do it if there are only like two tiles out.
Yeah. Or I could say, I don't believe you. Prove it.
And then and now I would the ball's have
back to your court
yeah.
again. And so, yeah, this game is a wild little ride.
The other, there's one other thing we can do, though.
Okay.
Aside from the, so you can place, tell them to place a stone, hide a stone, swap, peek, boast, or you could challenge. And challenge is just for one. So I could point at a tile and I say, I challenge you to tell me what that tile is.
Tell me what's under there.
One for one. If he gets it, he gets a point. If he doesn't get it, I get a point.
You get a point. That's right.
Yeah.
So that's, it's a very, very simple game. But it sounds confusing, but it's really not. It's a lot of fun. And it's so difficult. It's
very simple, but very difficult.
Because like, you're trying to trip up your opponent, but by doing that, you end up tripping up yourself more often than not.
I don't know if hilarious. Yeah, if this needs to be a game like to actually, for me to do well at it, maybe I need to play first thing in the morning. But
yeah, I don't know. Late at night's not ideal.
But it's fun. It's quick. They say it's up to like 10 minutes. Yeah. It's less than 10 minutes. And maybe it's just because my brain doesn't work that well.
I would say it's an under 10 minute game. I wouldn't say it's 5 minutes, but I would say it's between, 8, 9, 10 minutes and your game is over.
Yeah, maybe I guess depending on how long you have to think about the tiles.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's a real fun game. I've been looking at it for a while.
I hadn't seen it at all. And you just pointed at it. You're like, oh, this is that game I've been looking at. And it's like super...
But it was
super sale, and I was like, "Oh, sure, let's grab it." And it comes in the nicest little package.
Oh man,
it's a metal
case,
and these are like big, thick tiles, and it's awesome. Just great quality.
Yeah, round crystal tiles, and they actually the case holds them. It's like a stiff foam that holds them really nicely. So when you're traveling, they're not going to be clinking around in there.
Yeah, no, it's awesome and small.
Yeah.
You can just bring it anywhere. It's like the size of a big wallet.
I don't know how we found it there because apparently it's only sold on their website for Rune.
I don't know how we got this copy because it's nowhere else in Canada that we can find.
I don't know. Telstones but on their website anyways. And it's a fun little game. It's
good.
Really neat.
We really enjoyed it. Highly recommend it. If you like two-player games,
brain burner,
chess match, this is the one for you.
But
we are going to run. We're way over time here. We will see you next week. Cheers.
See ya.
What up, gamers? I'm Jason, and together with my wife, Julie, we are Dice and Dragons. Unfortunately, Julie's been under the weather for the last couple days, so I'm handling another solo section of What You've Been Playing Wednesdays. And as we haven't got too many games played together, I decided it was time for us to, well, for me to play a solo game, one that I've heard a lot of good things about and have been waiting to play, which is Under Falling Skies, published by Czech Games Edition and designed by Tomas Ulier. Now, in this game, you're going to be you're going to be building your base and expanding it as you work to save the world as well as your city from the invading alien forces. You're going to be having alien ships descending from the top of the play area. Each of the play area tiles are double-sided, so you can decide on the difficulty that you would like to be playing. And then going from there, you're going to need to maneuver the ships by placing dice, and I said the enemy ships, because where you place your dice in your base and the value that you use is going to affect how those ships descend towards you and whether you're going to be able to save the human race or potentially fail in your attempt. Now, I've had a lot of fun with this game. It's definitely something that is very different than what I've played before, and I really didn't know what to expect. One of the things that I really like about the game is that it plays very well as a solo game, and then also can play very well with more players, because all you're really doing at that point, if you're adding in more players, is just changing up how you're going to be making your decisions. Because the key aspects of this game is rolling dice, getting the values that are on the dice, and then making the best decision possible to ensure that you're going to come out ahead. And you need to upgrade your base with those die values. You also need to shoot down the enemy ships and really try to mitigate the damage that you're going to be taking. And the reason why I say mitigate is because there's really no way to stop yourself from taking damage in Under Falling Skies. It's just something that's going to happen, timing when those ships actually run into your base, and what situation you are potentially okay with taking damage is going to make all of the difference in the long run. Because if you don't time things right, it's going to very easily get out of control and cause a lot of problems for you going forward. And this game, I have to say, also is very high up on the challenge level. I played this on the easy setting, and I really wasn't expecting it to push me as much as it did. And that's a great thing, because a lot of the time when you're playing any type of solo cooperative game, you really want to have a situation where the game isn't easy and that you have to put in a lot of thought in order to win and resolve the situation. And that's not always the case with some games. And fortunately, Under Falling Skies falls in the latter category and gives you that very challenging experience that solo gamers and cooperative gamers crave. So really happy about that. And overall, I just love everything about this game. There's also the campaign mode, which I have yet to get to and experience, but it's something that is definitely on my list. I really want to play through the 10 games, and hopefully that's something that Julie and I will be able to play together. Now, I'm pretty much finished talking about the game. I don't have a lot of negatives to say about it at this point in time, just because I've only really played 2-3 games of it, and so far it's been a lot of fun and very tight, as I mentioned. Now, I can see that the game will get a little bit repetitive. The fact that you've got the different cities, different special abilities, and the robot dice that I haven't tried yet will add a fair bit of variability. And I really like the fact that you can easily play a standalone game, or you can decide to play this in campaign mode very easily. So overall, no complaints about Under Falling Skies. I finally see why everyone was recommending this game as a great pick for solo gamers. And I highly recommend this game if you are a solo gamer and you're looking to find something that's very easy to play, plays quickly, but also has a lot of depth in the terms of its decision-making process and how you need to expand your base. Because if you don't expand your base properly, you're going to quickly find yourself in a bad spot and in a lot of trouble. So there you have it. That's all I have to say today for this episode of What You've Been Playing Wednesdays. I'll definitely be playing more Under Falling Skies, and you should definitely check it out if you're interested, and keep your ears and eyes peeled for a review coming to the channel, hopefully in the near future, not quite sure when, but as Julie's getting back into gaming with me, so we got a few other things to take care of, but it should be coming shortly. And with that being said, don't forget, keep playing games.
Hey there, this is Norm from Cardboard Conjecture Podcast and Bridge City Board Gamers here in Saskatoon. And let's get right to it. Let's see what the community has been playing on our Facebook thread, What You've Been Playing Wednesday. And to start off, Hans, I'm going to say Terraforming Mars, yes. Praga Kaput Regni, I love saying that name. The Magnificent and Cascadia and Luxor with all the Queenies and expansion. So, wow, awesome lineup. Terraforming Mars, we're just going to like chisel that one in stone. Praga Kaput Regni, yeah, yay, love that. Fantastic designer. You'll find out that one of my favorites. The Magnificent, I think that's a dice placement thing. And Cascadia, oh man, I can't say enough about that one. Jason, Clank Legacy. Oh, Envious. I love Clank. What a great game. The space and the regular one. Kilt Castle, Strike, Welcome To, and Bonanza. Oh, Bonanza is such a fun trading game. Probably one of the best games at seven players. I mean, other than Seven Wonders, this one is fun. So yeah, good job. Eli, still Marvel Champions and Cartographers with Hero Expansion. Nice. Marvel Champions. I love Marvel Champions. Get to be a superhero. Awesome. Lane, Gloomhaven Brew and Space Traders and some game about steampunk airships. All right. All right. Someone replied, Celestia is pretty dang good. I think that's the steampunk airships. Jeff, just some Marvel Crisis Protocol this week. Awesome. Justin, Teotihuacan was the only one for me, but it was a fun one. Cool. Yeah, I've got to get into that series. Ryan raves about Zolkin. So awesome. Garth, had family over, played more accessible games. So Rummy Cube, Carcassonne, Wingspan, Between Two Cities, Non-Legacy, My City, Azul Summer, Pavilion, and lastly, a great game of Space Base. Wow! That sounded like a great family function. Awesome. Awesome. Rebecca, Monopoly Deal, Azul, Calico. Mm-hmm. Love Calico. 5-Minute Dungeon. Number 9, Suro. Suro is such a fun spatial relationship game. Like, awesome. It's so awesome. Moving on. David, I started a board game club at school this week and had 8 of my students show up, and we played Ticket to Ride and Catan. Yes, that's fantastic. Those are fantastic game openers. Awesome. The one game that I quickly want to talk about here is a game called Maquis, and it is brought to you by Side Room Games. There's a pause there because I just had to go look at it. Side Room Games did a Kickstarter, kind of like a reprint and a bit of an update. I'm not too sure because it's the original one came out in 2013. And what I found really unique about this is that in 2013, this game is one player only. Like, this is a solo only game. And in 2013, I don't think there was anything on the radar about those kind of games, right? Except for Solitaire, the card game. I mean, even back then, I said to Ryan, I don't think there was like a good foundation of cooperative games that that existed. Maybe Pandemic came out back then. I'm not too sure. I'd have to look. But Maquis is a great game, thematically speaking, because I'm a history teacher. It is the French Resistance during the Second World War. And it's a worker placement thing where you have a map of the city divided by a river. And on the top of your board are two roads that lead off of the board. And those two roads are identified with the two mission cards that you have to accomplish. And there's level 1, level 2, level 3. And so there's a lot of variability in that because there's several in each of those level categories. And so what, like good worker placement, what you have to do is with the thematic connection to, the French Resistance, there's spaces that like buildings that you can go to get food, like the grocers. You can go to little radio towers to radio in secret drop-offs in fields that you go pick up later. All these resources that are like medicine, all these resources that are connected contribute to the mission goals. Now, what's very cool is the idea is you have a safe house, and when you start off with 3 resistance fighters, and when you put one out, you have to flip the patrol deck because there are the militia who patrol, and there's soldiers. And if you eliminate militia, they get replaced with soldiers. So you have to be careful on that, and your morale is affected as well. And so you repeat this process to get your people on the board. Now, to retrieve the resources, they have to find a way back to the safe house without being stopped by the patrol. If they're stopped by the patrol, they're off the board. So there is that delicate mapping process of where do you get resources? How do you get these resources? Are you able to come back into the safe house at the end of the turn? Now, consider that there are 3 spaces that are open to, let's say, a game development, because they're little spots where you can have these these work replacement spots or rooms be another safe house or be like a counterfeiting area or a bomb making spot or a propaganda shop that helps your morale. So there's, I think, 6 or 7 of these variable different rooms that you can build through the money that you make in the worker placement. It is such a fun game. Anybody who is in a solo only kind of situation, I think this one's coming to the friendly. This was a Kickstarter, so I'm hoping that this hits the shelves pretty quick, because I encourage everybody to have a go at this. And the games are 30 minutes. But what I've noticed is you can, because of level 1, level 2, level 3, you can create your own campaign, preset these cards, and then try and work your way through this campaign of French resistance during this time period. Maquis by Sideroom Games. Yes, well done, well done. I think, just off the top of my head, Steins. I'll try and get it in the show notes. My apologies if I've mispronounced it. But that being said, thank you so much for having listened to what we have to say about the games we've been playing recently. And thank you so much to the contributors. Once again, it doesn't happen without you contributing and collaborating on this project. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And that being said, keep your stick on the ice and take care out there, eh?